Welcome to season 11 of the PQI podcast presented by NCODA. We're kicking off the season with an important discussion about step therapy, also known as fail first, and the impact these requirements can have on patients with cancer. Joining us are Dr. Lucio Gordon, President and Managing Physician of Florida Cancer Specialists and Research Institute, and Jay Seaman, Vice President of Market Access at B1 Medicines. Together, they explore treatment delays, administrative burdens, and the importance of preserving individualized, evidence-based treatment decisions. All right. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Gordon and Jay, for joining us on the PQI podcast today. Really excited to have you both here to talk about a topic that is so, so important for our patients. So to start out, will you each please introduce yourself and tell us a little about you? I would love to hear a little bit about you professionally and personally as well. And we'll start with Dr. Gordon.
Thank you, Ginger. Thank you, Jay, for joining me on this podcast today. I appreciate NCODA's support of community oncology and getting patients the right medication at the right time. So I'm Dr. Lucio Gordon. I'm a board-certified hematologist and medical oncologist. I'm also the president and managing physician for Florida Cancer Specialists and Research Institute. This is a large physician-led community oncology practice that has a very significant footprint. I continue to see patients in Gainesville, and which is very important for me. As far as my leadership focus, I really like precision oncology, clinical research, real-world evidence, quality, and access to innovation for our patients and our practice. From a personal standpoint, I am grounded by my family, the local community, horses here in North Central Florida where I live. So you see pictures with me and horses more than you want. My guiding principle of life is policy decisions and clinical decisions made based on data to serve real patients and families in the real time, in the real world.
Wonderful. I didn't realize that about horses. I know you're close to Ocala if you're there in Gainesville, so it's beautiful there.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, I have a little horse farm here in Gainesville.
Okay, and then I have to ask too, go Gators?
Go Gators.
Okay. Very good.
It's not an optional thing.
That's a good thing. I went to Florida for my undergrad, but my husband went to Florida State. So, you know, we're the house divided. Yes.
Yep. I'm glad the marriage is still on.
It's still running over 20 years strong. So, and then Jay, would love to have you introduce yourself.
Yeah. Thanks, Ginger. And I just wanted to say thanks to NCODA for the opportunity to participate in this podcast, especially with Dr. Gordon. It's an honor to be here with him to discuss such an important topic and to raise awareness on this. I'm Jay Seaman. I've been in the biotech pharma company for a couple decades plus now, focused on commercializing mostly oncology products with a really heavy emphasis in market access. I work for B1 Medicines. We're a global oncology company. We were founded in 2010, so we're still relatively new. We have three commercial products and a deep pipeline of therapies we hope to bring to the market. We focus in oncology, and we bring the products to patients worldwide. We have a very heavy emphasis in research and development. I'm also fortunate that the organization is highly committed to patient advocacy and market access. And that's a side of the business that I'm focused on and working as well. So on the personal front, I'm definitely not as exciting as Dr. Gordon. I don't have the horses and that type of pastime, but I am a family man for one. And I think what I will share with you relative to this podcast is on my personal life, I have extensive experience with cancer as well. I've lost both of my parents to cancer in their lifespan, and then also my wife as well. She was diagnosed with breast cancer 15 years ago and had the opportunity to help her along that journey as well. And fortunately, she is disease-free now, but in all those cases, being the caregiver, if you will, we faced a lot of different access barriers and had a chance to experience those firsthand. And I think what that did for me is gave me a lot of great perspective, and it's made me even more passionate about market access. And I think that helps in this cause especially as well.
Thank you, Jay. And I'm sorry about your parents. And absolutely, I'm so glad that your wife is doing well. And I know I talk about this on here often, but as a patient as well from back in my 20s, a couple of times, I do think that bringing that cancer experience and personal experiences changes your viewpoint on the world, changes how you interact with things, and really shows you what's important.
I completely agree. It changes everything.
So, to level set, we're here to talk about step edits today. And for our listeners who might not be familiar with the term, what is step therapy and how is it currently being used in cancer care?
So, step therapy or fail first is the barrier that the payer places on us, on our patients and families. So, fail first is the requirement of the payer to use a preferred treatment before coverage of the prescribed therapy. So, here with step edit, the payer is trying to dictate what the payer wants, and that's my core concern. It's an administrative sequence overriding the current medical evidence and individualized clinical judgment. Oncology is very different. It's very nuanced. The treatment depends so much on tumor biology, biomarkers, staging, prior therapies, comorbidities, and patients' goals. So, getting a middle person or decision maker, usually non-medical, without the connection with the patient face to face, without truly understanding the specifics, the nuances, as I said before, about the patient, it's a mistake. We cannot allow fail first therapies to continue. This is, I don't think it's ethical. I don't think it's a responsible practice, and it's not in the best interest of our patients.
Absolutely. And it seems like it's continuing to grow, like we're hearing more and more about it. So why do you think it continues on, even though what you just said, it's unethical and not the best for the patient?
There has been a rise in the cost of healthcare in the United States. Cancer care drugs have increased in price, and of course that is one of the potential drivers. There has been expansion of Medicare Advantage programs and management. There are more treatment options, and sometimes the a payer may take the treatment options as an excuse to use their preferred agent over the clinical evidence. So always science first, clinical evidence first, everything patient first, and then we can consider other options if they are absolutely equal. Otherwise, step editing does not help anybody. We will end up actually being more costly to the payer, in my opinion, if we're treating the patient with the quote unquote not very best therapy. The patient may have side effects, complications, ER visits, hospitalization, and this will, without any doubt, increase the total cost of care, Ginger. So I really don't like the concept, and it gives me great concern that this still exists and continues to expand.
Yes, for sure. And Jay, anything to add on your end?
I think Dr. Gordon answered it very well. It's from my perspective, it's just calling on payers and PBMs. It's a utilization management tool that's very common in their business models in other therapeutic categories like cardiovascular and gastroenterology and some other therapeutic areas where there's an abundance of products that are clinically equivalent are close enough, right? Where they can go in and manage and prefer certain products over others and have, fail first types of policies in place. But to Dr. Gordon's point, oncology is different. And I think as oncology has grown and payers and PBMs are trying to manage the class a little more closely, they're just using some of their traditional utilization management tools that they've used in other therapeutic areas to oncology. And Dr. Gordon said it very well. It's very nuanced. It's very patient specific, and it doesn't fit into cancer therapy into the model of therapeutic cancer because of the differences in products and the differences in patients as well too. So I think they're just using what they're used to use in other therapeutic areas into oncology, which doesn't work well and creates a tremendous amount of distress. And it takes away the power of the knowledge of the physician making the right choice for the patient.
I know as a patient, I would not want that to happen. And I just think about every NCODA meeting we have, there's always such a demand and request for precision medicine, precision care, everything centered around the patient. And this just feels like it goes completely in the opposite direction of everything that we as a cancer community are trying to do. And Dr. Gordon, so from the practice perspective, what happens when the treatment selected based on the patient's diagnosis, their biomarker, everything within precision medicine, their biomarkers, comorbidities, preferences, doesn't align with a payer's required treatment sequence? And how does
Sure.
that conflict there?
Understand. So the care team, the medical team, faces three difficult choices because of step editing or fail first. One is to appeal and patient gets delayed initiation of therapy. These appeals take a while. And when I may say a while, it's not hours or 1 or 2 days, which is at the most what we would consider reasonable. Appeal means in delay, we're talking about many days, few or several weeks. This is totally unacceptable for a cancer patient and their families and us, the physicians and providers. Another option that we have is to use a less appropriate therapy, the one that is utilization management from PBMs or a payer. As Jay said, utilization management is a very blunt instrument. Doesn't take into account the nuances of the patient and the experience of the physician and provider with the drugs. So it's harm will happen just because of the use of less appropriate therapy. As I explained before, potentially more side effects, discontinuation of therapy, ER visits, hospitalizations, and there are serious side effects that can be fatal. Or significantly problematic for the patient. And the third option that we have, which is also very undesirable, is to expose the patient to unaffordable costs. If the patient and we want to go around the PBM or the payer, then the cost is unaffordable for any of us. So it's not it doesn't make any sense for patient care. So the decision that comes forced from above PBMs payers in step editing is not at all a shared decision-making process. It does not take into consideration potential comorbidities that a patient may have. There are nuances regarding efficacy, toxicity, schedule, convenience, and quality of life. We treat patients that sometimes are 5 minutes away from the office. I treat patients who are 3 hours away from the office. I treat patients who may be 55 years old with a double PhD and patients who have a different level of scholarly training. The financials is also very, very different. And this is not taken into consideration by the payer PBM. Again, a blunt tool to try to fix a problem that the use of blunt tool causes a lot of damage for the patient and the cost of care. Also, what kind of bothers me is it interferes with the physician provider patient relationship. We are the ones seeing the patient. We are the ones who spent 20 years in school to get there. And then we prescribe a drug, and then the patient gets a call that, oh, we need to appeal or delay, or we need to get a different drug. That burns a lot of goodwill and causes mistrust between patient provider and patient physician. I'm sorry, a patient physician. And this is unacceptable, in my opinion.
All great points. It goes a lot deeper than just the surface level once you really start getting into it. And you mentioned the delays in care that it can cause. So what can this mean for a patient, especially, if they have a rapidly progressing cancer, even if they don't perhaps mentally, but what can these delays mean for patients?
Yeah, there's plenty of data to support the statement that delays in therapy can be very problematic for a myriad of different cancers. Certainly, leukemias, lymphomas, especially the intermediate and high-grade lymphomas, aggressive neoplastic solid tumor disorders, and a delay of sometimes a few days can be very problematic for a patient with an aggressive cancer. For a patient with a moderately aggressive cancer, still 2 weeks delay can be very significant, especially if the patient has comorbidities, an older patient, higher challenges from a social, educational standpoint. All this adds up to poor outcomes if we're delaying. Now, if you're delaying 4 weeks, it's a nightmare from a biological standpoint and from a psychological, psychiatric standpoint for all parties, for the physician, for the other providers, for the clinic, especially for the patients and their families. Again, not acceptable. And there are many patients that we're treating for curative intent. Hodgkin's lymphoma is an example. We can't spend time with foolishness and in delaying therapy because time really matters in the curative setting. And in the palliative setting, also it's important. Maybe we're not talking about a cure there, but we're talking about alleviation of symptoms. We're talking about management of the whole anxiety and the negative aura related to the new diagnosis of cancer. This absolutely should not exist. Delays should be mitigated to the max we can, and having step therapy fail therapy first as a scheme to try to save money from one side of the equation is absolutely unacceptable.
And I can speak from the patient perspective and not the, treatment outcome, but just the waiting is the worst. And Jay, you can probably speak to this as well. But when you are a patient, like you, even waiting 2 days for results is awful. So I know I just wanted to get on therapy and get going, like both times, like just get me started and let me know that I'm being treated and you are trying to cure this. So Jay, I don't know if you have anything else to add there as well.
And I think you're spot on. And I learned that from my personal journey with my wife, where we had some delays in test results and things like that, that creates a tremendous amount of stress that is part of the journey too. And I think a step edit, which doesn't need to happen, is just adding to that level of stress that the patient has to go through. And it's really unfortunate because oncology practices, as Lucio knows, I mean, they're operating in a very high complex environment on treating the patient. And this just adds another layer of administrative work that they have to go through patient by patient to try to get access to the right therapy. And I just don't think it's necessary, right? The physician makes a choice. We're a company that's a big advocate of physician and patient choice, and that should be left up to the physician and not the insurance company. So, cancer is, as Lucio mentioned, time is often part of that treatment journey, right? They have to get on therapy as quickly as they possibly can. There's a lot of data out there, and I don't know if I really truly appreciated it until I went through it personally, with my wife. But, we have a really robust patient support program that we staff actually with oncology certified nurses that are trained in detecting distress. And so when that resource is utilized, we try to help identify, the stress that the patient or caregiver may be going through and try to help provide support through it throughout their journey. And fighting the cancer itself is where all their energy should be focused. It shouldn't be focused on all the other peripheral things that go with it. And unfortunately, that happens more often than it should. So the focus should be on their treatment and getting their mind straight and mentally, committed to fighting their cancer.
A great service that you guys are providing. And Dr. Gordon, Jay touched on a little bit about the administrative burden. So, in addition to everything you've mentioned, that also causes more work for your staff. So, kind of what does that look like? I know it's probably unpaid work for your staff as well. And how can it also reduce the time that the care team has available for actual patient care?
Yeah, great question. And Jay mentions some of this already, but the reality of clinical practice in the U.S. for specifically for medical oncology, which is so complex, it's a difficult one. We have a scarcity of clinical capacity. There are issues with staff burnout, provider physician. It's not easy to hire more of us. Less of us are being educated, produced in our medical schools as compared to the needs of a growing elderly population in the US. So very complicated. So to your question, what happens? So whenever we get a denial, obviously the first thing it triggers a policy review. We have to find out, so did we get anything wrong here? So there's time wasted there. Then we have to collect the records of the patients. Then physicians, other providers start getting involved, explain to the patient. Then we have to resubmit, and then the resubmission sometimes comes back. Then we have to fight for medical exceptions. Then there may be peer-to-peer calls that many times are not with a practicing medical oncologist or hematologist. And in the middle, we have the patients who need it and their families who need to be updated. A bunch of phone calls back and forth. So this involves nursing staff, our pharmacies, advanced practice providers, doctors, financial counselors, the revenue cycle staff, and the front staff. So it's an eternal circle of inefficiency and increased expenses. Not only the clinical part, it's so complicated, but the administrative burden is enormous.
So it affects everyone, is what you're saying, basically, from
Affects
front
the,
desk
yeah,
to.
so we have almost 5,000 teammates at Florida Cancer Specialists.
Crazy.
And they're all busy. I always joke that the day only has 24 hours, except at FCS. We try to do everything we can do to take care of patients. And it's a burden that we don't need. It serves no purpose.
For sure, for sure. And so the issue involves not only practices like FCS, but manufacturers, payers, PBMs, employers, again, everyone, policymakers, patient organizations. So Jay, on your from your perspective, how can manufacturers balance contracting and distribution strategies with the need to avoid care fragmentation, the treatment delays, added burdens for patients and practices? So what on your end, what are some of the solutions look like?
That's a really great question. And on the pharma side, big picture, developing innovative medicines is only part of our responsibility. We also have a responsibility and should make a big commitment to helping patients get access to the therapy. So this means investing very heavily in parts of the business like the patient support services that we provide and having like a fast start program so patients can get on therapy as quick as they can, but also partnering with different provider and advocacy organizations like NCODA and COA is important. I think we also have a responsibility to look at our distribution strategies and models. And I'm a big supporter of medically integrated pharmacies, as you know, and pharma has ways to try to make sure that that side of the business gets access to therapies. So being very thoughtful about that and then just committing to the science as well and developing these evidence-based therapies. And committing to policies that can help remove barriers as well. So we need to partner across the board with all stakeholders to help remove the barriers for the patients. And then when all these stakeholders are aligned and they're focused together, it's all about improving the patient experience. At the end of the day, the patient is the one that benefits the most, and that's the responsibility we have.
Absolutely. Thank you. And one thing I do appreciate about you and your company is that you all do support medically integrated pharmacy so much and truly put the patient first. And what about policymakers? Like, where does that fit in? And either one of you can answer this question, Jay or Dr. Gordon, if you have anything to add.
Yeah, we continue to educate the policymakers, make step edit, fail first schemes very visible in terms of white papers, publications, presentations, podcasts such as this, so we can educate our fellow physicians and providers. Many of them, when I speak with them in person in Florida or Washington, D.C., they get pretty excited and pretty nervous about the existence of step editing and fail first. Some of them do not understand or do not understand what this is about. And everybody who has had cancer personally or in their families or friends, they will react very negatively from a policymaker standpoint to step editing. So usually once we get access to the policymakers, they react positively to our educational effort.
That's great. And anything to add from your standpoint?
I would just add to that that I love the approach. Lucio's been a big advocate for this, fighting for physician and patient choice, and the legislative side. It's very active, and the physician and patient voice matters tremendously, significantly. And we also, on the pharma side, my company in particular, has put a lot of resources and effort into this cause as well. So things like PBM reform, where there's transparency, and then Safe Step Acts, where there's potential reform that would revise step therapy, is very active right now too. And then just really encouraging other stakeholders like CMS, for example, who does the oversights of formularies and payers. And oncology is intended to be a protected class, and encouraging them to do the appropriate oversight for the payers to make sure that they are implementing the right access to therapies for patients and not causing hurdles or burdens. I think the other piece is these national organizations that provide clinical guidance too, like NCCN. I think they have a big role in this too, and it's encouraging to see some of the progress there. I've noticed where in some therapeutic areas they'll add to their guidelines, for example, that in a certain class that these products are not therapeutically interchangeable, for example. And that's a very strong statement. However, the payers are expected to follow those guidelines. Not all payers are following that. And in categories, they're not seeing those footnotes, if you will, by NCCN, and they're still providing step therapy. There may be some places where step therapy may make sense in oncology and categories where it's therapeutically interchangeable, but unfortunately, it's bleeding over to categories where there are clinical differences. So I just hope that they can continue to rely on those third-party organizations and folks like Lucio and the experts, the folks that have gone to medical school and have extensive experience in treating patients, are the ones that influence and help write those guidelines. And I think that'll help preserve the physician and patient choice.
Definitely the people that we should all be listening to determine what is best for patients, I would say. And you've both given some examples already, but looking forward, what specific changes do you think would make the greatest difference? And how can healthcare professionals, patients, caregivers, so our NCODA members and advocates do collectively to help move solutions forward? So what I would love to hear, like, one even real step that someone who's listening could take today or tomorrow.
Well, I usually try to fix problems very intensely, and I would encourage the policymakers to prohibit fail-first requirements in oncology, because the treatment selection that we get for the patient is evidence-based, individualized, all the nuances that I mentioned before. So my soundbite here is to eliminate step editing. Second ways of doing this or secondary ways of doing this would be kind of gold card programs, very fast processes for step editing, meaning a response within 12 hours or one business day. I don't like that. I think this should go away completely. But there are potential other ways that this can be managed. But again, the absence of step editing is my goal for my patient.
And how would you recommend, like, one of your colleagues making sure that their voice is heard on this issue?
So, as far as getting our physicians involved and have their voices heard, I usually encourage our community oncology providers from our practice, others, to be vocal, to stay involved, to be part of learning what advocacy is about, to really be part of the solution and not only sitting back and doing nothing or complaining. We gotta fight for the patient. And that's the only way is one by one.
Absolutely. Thank you. And Jay.
Yeah, I would just reinforce that. I thought it was a great answer. I just think a united front from all parties just focused on increasing the awareness and the education of what step therapy and fail first really is, because it's, I think, a newer a frontier in oncology. I think there was some in the past, but not as much as there is today. And Dr. Gordon talked about why that's happened, more products and some of the advancements we've made in oncology too, about just turning it into almost a chronic disease sometimes, as in the past. I think all these are factors that have caught the attention of payers, and they're just using the same tactics that they've used in the past. So the provider and patient voice is so powerful, strong, and I applaud. Lucio's written a couple papers on this already. NCODA has stepped up as an organization at the highest level, and has embraced this initiative and priority, and it really makes a difference. I'm seeing and feeling it as I interact directly, on the pharma side with some of these stakeholders. So your voice does matter, and the more vocal we are, the better. I think the united front is key. I think that, pharma will, and I'm committed to doing everything I can with a company that's committed to the cause as well. But I think having all stakeholders involved and working that legislative channel, I think is key to all this, because I think it's going to take, some type of a significant legislative reform to really mitigate the issue systemically. Otherwise, it'll be more fragmented, but we're all united. We're all in it together, and it's about physician and patient autonomy and choice. And I'm convinced we're going to get there. But I think it's just raising your voice.
Wonderful. Thank you. And I do feel like the momentum seems to be moving in the right direction. Like, we're hearing more and more about trying to move the needle in recent days. So thank you both for the work that you're doing there. And Dr. Gordon, I believe you'll have an article coming out in Oncolytics today this fall as well. You can read more about step edits there. But we have one final fun question. And just before that, thank you both for all of the work that you're doing for patients. Thank you for the time that you have taken for the podcast. And I love NCODA so much because everyone is so collaborative. So thank you both, for working again, patients first and putting them in the center and working collaboratively. But our final fun question, so it's changing this season. Our staff, we had a little kind of not competition, but everyone's submitted ideas. So Cooper Bailey, I don't know, you guys probably both know Cooper. He's the winner with this one. But if your life was a movie, what would the audience be screaming at the screen for you to do right now?
Tough question. I think a lot of things. The audience being patients, their families, even physicians, providers, the whole ecosystem that actually takes care of the patient, they will be screaming for less friction in the movie. Solutions that the movie would bring to minimize the burden of being diagnosed with cancer, treating cancer as a healthcare provider, decrease the administrative nightmare that this can be. Reducing out-of-pocket costs for the patient. The physicians and the providers would be screaming for ways of helping us keeping up with the pace of science, right? It's so exciting, but it's daunting in a way because so much information is being published every single day. When I started practicing a medical oncologist, we didn't have a significant number of biomarkers. We took into consideration some of the genetics and genomics, but it was very little as compared to what we have today. So I think we collectively in that audience in that movie would be asking for ways of getting science, medications, clinical trials, less administrative friction to patient care ASAP.
That is true talent, Dr. Gordon, what you just did there and tied it all back to the topic. I love it. I love it. That's fantastic. And Jay, how about you?
Yeah, that is an excellent question. And I don't think I've been asked that before. That's a really good one. I think what I would say is that I would hope that the audience would be screaming to keep going, to keep fighting and not give up, to stay passionate. And they would be right there alongside me, fighting these different barriers and encouraging me to stay the course, if you will, to never give up. But we live in a very complex healthcare system, and there's multiple barriers along the way, and it can get exhausting on all fronts, especially the emotional side of it when you're going through cancer from a caregiver standpoint or a patient perspective. It's overwhelming, that part of it alone, and all these barriers along the way could just make it more stressful. And I would hope that the audience sees that and they see how committed and how hard it is to remove those barriers. And I hope they'd be sitting there, cheering me on, saying just don't give up. Let's keep fighting together, and let's impact the outcomes.
Another
Yeah.
great answer. I love the audience cheering. And I feel like you two were just getting the season started, but you two are probably going to win for best answer of the final fun question this season.
I'd like just to finish by saying a quote from Teddy Roosevelt, and I have that under my email signature, that the greatest prize that life has to offer is to work hard at work worth doing.
Oh.
And that is something that we can't forget.
That is a perfect way to end the podcast, Dr. Gordon. So thank you. Thank you for sharing that. Thank you for joining us for the opening episode of Season 11 of the PQI Podcast. Today's discussion reminds us that timely access to the right therapy is essential in cancer care. By raising awareness, sharing the patient and provider experience, and working collaboratively across the oncology community, we can help protect physician and patient choice and reduce barriers to treatment. To continue learning and get involved, visit the NCODA Step Edits Education Hub for educational resources, tools, and the latest updates on this important issue. We also encourage you to add your voice by signing the NCODA Step Edits sign-on letter, demonstrating your support for timely, evidence-based access to cancer care and reducing unnecessary treatment delays. We look forward to bringing you more meaningful conversations throughout what promises to be a great season.